friend that wants to shoot someone. My lord, your time has come right between the eyes. Fell his master not by chance, away with pomp and circumstance. Come join our merry dance to the rhythm of goodbye. Farewell, the jewel crown.
Hello there, I'm Samson Sees, and welcome to yet another edition of The Monarchy here on Press TV. We continue to give you the alternative views regarding the one and only Great Britain, whether they are internal affairs or foreign affairs. These types of issues, of course, cannot be found in the mainstream media networks, so sit tight and prepare for what we have to offer. Just before we conclude last week's topic of military coups, here's an update of the latest UK news headlines.
Britain has a CCTV camera for every 11 people, including 750,000, in sensitive locations, such as schools and hospitals. According to the British Security Industry Authority, there are up to 5.9 million closed-circuit cameras across Britain, dramatically raising the previous estimates that put the number of cameras somewhere between 1.5 million and 4 million. The British Broadcasting Corporation, BBC, has been accused of spying on the emails of staff it suspected of leaking information. According to figures revealed under the Freedom of Information legislation, the BBC's investigation service monitored emails sent and received by 30 members of staff last year. Four of these were staff suspected of having leaked information to people outside the organisation, and three of what it described as taking part in malicious communications. Britain has blocked talks between the US and the European Union on the US spying on the EU, saying the bloc has no authority to discuss Americans' methods to safeguard their national security. The EU and the US were to form two working groups on intelligence and espionage, on data privacy and the US National Security Agency's PRISM program, and sit down for talks in Washington. However, only the latter part will be on the agenda, and one working group is formed after Britain and Sweden vetoed the EU attempts to demand explanations from the American officials on revelations of espionage. The British police say they have asked Australian authorities to consider possible charges against two radio hosts over a prank call involving the British royal family, which led to the death of a nurse, Jacinta Saldana, a nurse at the London hospital where the pregnant wife of the British Queen's grandson, Prince William, was being treated. She allegedly killed herself after taking the call from the Sydney-based radio hosts, who introduced themselves as royal family members. British Prime Minister David Cameron has criticised Scottish First Minister Alex Salmond for waving a Scottish flag behind him during the celebration of the Wimbledon Tennis Championship. Cameron claimed that Salmond's cheers for Scottish tennis champion Andy Murray was a political statement, thinking that it didn't feel right and that it was a day for sport, not politics. Analysts believe that there would have been chaos if Cameron had displayed a Union Jack flag as well. A British court has described a woman at the centre of a $20 million London property fraud case as a prostitute, pretending to be a Saudi Arabian princess who had been borrowing millions of dollars from UK banks to fund her lifestyle. Sara Al-Amoudi claims to be the daughter of Sheikh Mohammed Hossein Al-Amoudi, a Saudi businessman who was ranked the 63rd richest man in the world by Forbes in 2011 and is estimated to have a wealth of around $12.3 billion.
Are generally headline grabbers and considered peculiarities of the less developed nations in the West, including in Britain. Yet Western media and governments do not refer to some of them as coups and choose complete silence about others. That is what happened about the alleged 1960s and 1970s coups in the UK, which is touted as the mother of all parliamentary democracies in the world.
Parts of the evidence related to plots to overthrow former British Labour Prime Minister Harold Wilson in military coups almost 35 years after his shock resignation on March 16, 1976, are now emerged. There were interviews with some senior figures of the time that Wilson was right to fear military coups by MI5 and senior military officers, though it followed the line of legitimate concerns that Wilson was a Soviet spy to justify the spy agency plan.
I wish I could have been Prime Minister in happier times and easier times.
It was to claim later on that there were a large number of officers in MI5 who believed that Wilson had been suborned and was a Soviet agent.
Barry Penrose, a journalist, wrote in an article for a Radio Times March 2006 edition that Wilson spoke darkly of two military coups which he said had been planned to overthrow his government in the late 1960s and in the mid-1970s. Penrose, who conducted interviews with Wilson after his resignation in 1976 and secretly recorded them with the help of a colleague, Roger Cordial, added that both were said to involve high-ranking elements in the British Army, eager to see the back of Labour governments. Both coups involved a member of the royal family, Prince Louis Mountbatten. Lord Hunt, who was Cabinet Secretary between 1973 and 1979 and conducted an inquiry into Wilson's concerns that MI5 was bugging the Prime Minister's office, has more secrets to say which are especially revealing. Hunt confirms that the Secret Service was indeed taking steps against Wilson's government. Hunt, however, refuses to accept the idea of a coup, claiming the MI5 was acting under the suspicion that Wilson is a Soviet spy.
But facts prove existence of a web of interconnected conspiracies to remove Wilson from government, using military power to counter his claim. The Earl of Cromarty and a group of Scottish aristocrats with SAS connections plan to set up a government under Lord Mountbatten in 1965.
The following year, Mountbatten was involved in discussion with another group of conspirators who wanted to replace Wilson. Daily Mirror Press Baron Lord Cecil King planned what he called an emergency government or national government. Mountbatten, who was the last Viceroy of India and Chief of Defence Staff from 1959 to 1965, was also involved with the private armies that various ex-military men, including General Sir Walter Walker, NATO Commander of Northern Europe in 1969 to 1972, and Major Alexander Greenwood, were setting up in the mid-1970s. Meanwhile, MI5 was leading an operation codenamed Clockwork Orange to defame Wilson as a Soviet spy and facilitate a military coup. Colin Wallace, a Ministry of Defence press officer at the time, was framed and imprisoned for manslaughter when he tried to expose the operation, while the British government banned the publication of memoirs by Peter Wright, the former assistant director of MI5 in 1986, apparently over fears that he could expose the coup attempts. Back in 2006, Penrose concluded his Radio Times article, saying that his interviews with Wilson convinced him that Britain was closer to a military government at the time than we'd ever be content to think.
Why the inquiry drew a blank is because the rogue element in MI5 had been very careful to leave no fingerprints. After all, the head of MI5 did apologise to Harold Wilson for their activities, and yet their activities have gone. Nobody seems to know anything about them. And I think Wilson is vindicated in his concerns. Something wrong really did happen, and he was a victim of it.
His conclusion is especially revealing for the UK, where the government pretends the parliamentary democracy is the inevitable form of an establishment purged from sliding into a military or authoritarian rule in its DNA.
In your statement that you, I think you, did you read the statement to the Cabinet?
Yes, I did.
Yes. In that statement, you made an interesting remark about the fact that you're determined not to succumb to the danger of being faced with a decision you've faced before, in case you mishandled it the second time round. I'm not quite sure what you meant.
No, it was a problem I was aware of when I was a civil servant very many years ago. You've looked at a problem, you've looked at a solution people have put forward, you've turned it down. There's a danger that 5 years later, when circumstances may have changed, you say, oh, we looked at that before, or I've been through this crisis before, and that you don't approach it with the freshness you should. I think that's a danger that can come after too many years. I hope I haven't done it, but I want to make sure that I don't, and that there'll be a fresh approach to all the problems.
But that is one of the big things which has decided you to bow out.
No, I think the big things really are, first, that I have been here a long time. It's been a long run, a happy run, almost the longest this century. I've got a wonderful team. I've got people almost of my own age group. Why should I sort of hog the thing and cling on and prevent them from having the chance of succeeding and bringing their distinctive approach? That is one of the arguments. The other argument, I think we are now at a turning point. Things are beginning to pick up again, very slowly, but beginning. Even unemployment is beginning to get more under control, I believe. But I would like new people to handle this. And, of course, we're at a turning point on the biggest thing of all, the attack on inflation. When we've got acceptance, against all the odds, as many people thought last year, by agreement, of what has to be done to fight inflation, the counter-inflation policy, the next stage, after the budget, will be to decide what we do for the next year. Now, I think that is the moment to go, to leave others to do the negotiations. I would hate to wreck those negotiations or even put them in at risk by an interruption through the need to have an election of a new leader, and when all the party conferences, all the trade union conferences are going on and so on. And there is a little lull before the budget, before any new negotiations can take place, so I think this is the time to do it. I've had a great deal of anxiety in working out what was the right timing. I think that's right.
But that does mean that your successor is going to have one of the most difficult jobs there could be as almost his first task, and that is obtaining agreement between differing opinions in the labour movement and the trade union movement about what that next stage of the counter-inflation policy should be.
I hope the way I handle it is going to help him, because we start from a national consensus, as well as a consensus with the trade union movement, within Parliament in the main, certainly on our side. He starts from that, and he starts with the goodwill of the country.
Can I ask you, if you feel you have a political weakness, what that is?
Well, I think it's always said I'm very forgiving. The man who kicks me in the teeth one week, I'm, I won't say exactly promoting him, I usually that takes a month. But I am forgiving, because I know we're all human beings with our frailties. I'm sometimes accused of another weakness, loyalty to my colleagues. That's not a weakness. I have always backed them, even when sometimes they've put me in a spot and I've tried to see them through. But loyalty by the Prime Minister to his colleagues is essential.
It was last week when a new story published by Press TV's UK desk surprised many. The story contained fresh revelations about former British Prime Minister Tony Blair and his close relationship with the Zionist regime of Israel.
Although considering Blair's attitude towards the Israeli regime, the story was not much of a surprise, but it still attracted much attention across our viewers.
Shimon has been Defence Minister, Finance Minister, Foreign Minister, Prime Minister. It's his birthday, he's 90, now he's President. What comes next? Well, we in Britain have our Queen and you have your Shimon.
Blair's private office in London, hiring a former Israeli army intelligence officer while he is the so-called peace envoy to the Middle East for the quartet, was not something that anyone could simply ignore. The Press TV website's Britain section, known as the UK Desk, therefore, tried its best to cover the story and expressed anti-war campaigners' stances on the issue. And this is when the events found a new twist and story becoming even more interesting.
The UK Desk received an email from Tony Blair's office on Saturday, July the 14th, 2013, with the following content.
Dear Sir, we have noticed a story on your website about Mr. Blair. We wanted to let you know that much of this story is factually inaccurate. The person you refer to worked for our company, Tony Blair Associates, on a completely unrelated project, not in the office of the quartet representative or on the peace process. She also did not work in Mr. Blair's private office. She did not come through the Israeli government, but through the normal recruitment process and is a fully qualified consultant for the task to which she was appointed. In addition, it is incorrect to refer to this person as an ex-Israeli spy. She was never a spy. We would be very grateful if you could please remove your incorrect story. Please could you let us know that you have received this email?
Hence, based on the content of the email and its arguments, we bond ourselves to provide the following explanations.
1. Press TV's UK Desk is committed to provide its target audiences with an alternative news angle, which are generally ignored by the British mainstream media deliberately. This news article has also been presented according to the same agenda. We believe the publication of Mr. Blair's office's entire email and our reservations about it would provide the public with even a better picture of the whole story. Two. It is claimed that Leon Polak, former Israeli army intelligence officer, has been recruited through normal channels and that the Israeli government had no role in her employment. That would not change the story even if it is true. She was certainly an Israeli regime's former intelligence officer, and how she is hired as an aide by the so-called peace envoy to the Middle East sparks doubts as well as questions. 3. What seems more interesting is the office's emphasis on that she was not a spy. How can Mr. Blair's private office be so sure that she has never been a spy? Let's assume that the office had no information over her role serving as a spy. Does that mean that she has never been so? Just to remind that a good spy is the one who is never exposed. 4. Moreover, a look on the record of Israeli intelligence officers raises more concerns over their role as spies. Zippy Livni is the most famous former intelligence officer who had affairs with Arab officials during her years as a Mossad agent. Let's assume that Leon Polak had no contact with other Israeli secret agents, and let's say she has been employed through normal procedures and without the help of the Zionist lobbies or Israeli organizations. Even with this almost impossible hypothesis, keeping her as an aide in the private office of the Middle East Peace Envoy, for which being neutral is the most important ethic, is in serious breach of the impartiality.
All in all, we leave the judgment to the Press TV audience. Our website is committed to provide the alternative stories not presented by the mainstream media. That is what the West could not tolerate. Not so much time has passed since Press TV and other Iranian satellite channels have been taken off the air by them, regardless of mutual contracts and agreements. And that's the way the cookie crumbles. Well, that's all we have time for today, unfortunately. We do hope you enjoyed all the content shown today and found it somewhat informative too. But don't stop there. Get in touch with us by writing on our Facebook wall, UK Desk Press TV. That's our profile. Go ahead and add us as a friend. Or if you prefer, do not hesitate to send us your emails to britain@presstv.ir. We look forward to hearing from you, always. So, carry on watching The Monarchy, because The Monarchy will carry on watching Britain. See you on next week's episode. Goodbye for now.
Chance away with pomp and circumstance. Come join our merry dance to the rhythm of goodbye. Farewell, the jewel crown. Farewell, the velvet gown. Watch it all come tumbling down. Goodbye to the crown. Goodbye to the crown. Goodbye to the king of nothing really. Wave of a hand and a life of Riley. Pot Nazi, Pot King Billy. Goodbye to the crown. Goodbye to the dear old mum, mummified on gin and rum. Smile and wave and just play dumb. Goodbye to the crowd.